Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
It has already been a busy week in sports, and it's only Tuesday. You could say it's the week when bubbles began to burst. The Patriots clearly no longer the powerhouse they were for 20 years. COVID looks like it may massively disrupt the college football season. And some baseball purists feeling the sting today as the Red Sox officially bring back an admitted cheater, though one beloved by players, as the team's manager. So let's check the score on all of it. We've got Radio Boston's Chris Siderick here. Hey there, Chris.
Hey, Tiziana. And I do have to note before we get started, a lot to cover, obviously, but within the last hour, we've had breaking news that the Celtics legend Tommy Heinsohn has passed away at the age of 86. Mm. And I struggled a little bit to come up with the words because this is a franchise that has had so many incredibly iconic players from Bill Russell, Larry Bird, Paul Pierce. There is no one more synonymous with the Boston Celtics than Tommy Heinsohn. And I think his presence has been felt by literally generations of fans. So he was a player for 9 seasons on this team, 8 championships, a Hall of Fame player in his own right. He was a coach for this team for almost a decade. And he's done play-by-play for the Celtics for almost 40 years. He and Mike Gorman are the longest-running sports combo in terms of a broadcast of all time. And I just want to highlight a little bit of that. If you haven't ever watched a Celtics game on TV, Tommy had just such a unique style. He was a homer in the greatest sense of the word. He loved this team. He literally bled green. And I think I just want to play a little bit of that so you can get a taste of how much passion he felt for the Celtics franchise.
Paul Pierce, who is an upper echelon player in this league, has been treated like a rookie.
He's down at the other end. He's all right.
And walked.
That was.
He walked. What is the matter with these guys? They're going to call it a hard foul. They're going to call it a hard foul. These guys are ridiculous. These guys are ridiculous.
I mean, this is incredibly tragic news, but I'm smiling because he was just so unique and just an incredible broadcaster, an incredible player, an incredible part of this franchise. And I just think there really aren't words to capture what he meant to the city of Boston. He was a legend. You know, one of his teammates, Frank Ramsey, once said as a player, he'd knock his own grandmother down for 2 points. So, I mean, he just lived Boston Celtics basketball, and we lost a real legend today.
Yeah, you know, it made me chuckle to hear that. Sometimes we feel the loss so profoundly because of the way the person brought us joy, right? And clearly he brought the joy of the sport to the Celtics and to Boston.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you've heard of Tommy points, but it's the most Boston thing
not.
Of all time. That if a player would do something like dive into the stands to save a ball, that's a Tommy point! He would get so excited
nice.
For guys that would hustle and just leave it all on the court. In an effort to win the game. And it just, that kind of passion, as you said, is just truly contagious and wonderful.
Well, Chris, it's sad, but I got to tell you, you're telling us about that, starting with that. I don't know. It just warms my heart. Thank you. All right. We do have some sports business to talk about here, starting with the Sox. They reintroduced Alex Cora
right.
today. We fired him for cheating while he was with the Astros in 2017. So tell people what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw, they tweeted out a picture of Alex Cora walking across the bridge with the sequel was the caption. So the team is obviously hyping this move. It's just really interesting to think back. As you said, Cora admitted his own role in the Houston Astros cheating scandal. And I just want to go back to what John Henry said about Cora and his involvement and the decision to part ways with him back in January when this first came out.
We've all held this wonderful baseball club to a very high standard. Today, this week, is not any different. We must ensure to the best of our ability that everyone in the organization represents the club in a manner that deserves the support and respect of our fans.
So I just found that really interesting. I watched the press conference today, and there were multiple questions to Cora about his role in Houston, and he wouldn't quite say whether he knew what he was doing at the time was wrong, but I thought one of the most telling answers was when someone asked him, basically, if this was so successful in Houston, In 2017, they went on to win the World Series after this huge cheating scandal. And then he comes to Boston in 2018. They asked him why he decided not to bring that sort of scheme to Boston. And I thought his answer was pretty telling. Here's how Cora answered that.
I don't know, man. I just decided, you know, in that off season to, I don't know, not bring it here. We had some conversations actually in spring training about a lot of stuff. I think at that point people were starting to talk about what, you know, what was going on around the league, and, you know, it wasn't worth it.
So that is so interesting, Chris. You and I have talked on air a couple times recently about sort of this battle for the soul of baseball. Where does this put that fight for the Sox?
I would say in the gray area. I mean, it sounds there like Cora's saying they actually thought about trying to institute this scheme in Boston and decided not to because they felt like maybe they would get caught if they did. Cora walked this fine line. Look, he's loved by players. He's loved by Red Sox ownership. We've known that all along. So he was kind of walking this line today of trying to show that he was sorry, that he has repented and he's thought a lot about what he did and why it was wrong and all that. But no direct acknowledgement of, I knew at the time this was wrong. And if you remember the details of this Astros cheating scandal, it was so blatant. They're literally banging on trash cans to communicate with players on the field. Almost spitting in the face of the integrity of baseball. I know sign stealing is a thing that goes on in the game, but they were basically analyzing live video and then communicating that via code to the players while the game's going on in front of stadiums full of people. Pretty disrespectful to the game, I think, and I have a hard time reconciling that. I like Alex Cora as a guy, as a manager. He has got a great approach. He balances the analytics and the eye test that we've talked about in the past. So it's really hard to kind of wrap your mind around this, and I know it's going to be hard to root for a guy. He says he's going to continue to try to make good on his actions over the last couple of years. We'll see kind of how that pans out as we move forward.
All right. So in our remaining time, I do want to switch gears to football. Got to ask you about the Pats. They barely beat the New York Jets last night, which, you know, the Jets would have been their first win of the season had they beat the Pats. So, it kind of feels like the bubble has been burst on the Pats dynasty here.
So I'm not quite there. I know everybody is going doom and gloom on the Pats. I think even if they have a terrible year and they finish something like 6-10 or some terrible record, they miss the playoffs, you have to kind of give a year to rebuild and see if Bill Belichick can build that back up. It's obviously the end of an era, right? Tom Brady is gone. The 20 years of Patriots winning that we saw since 2001, it's basically we've turned the page on that. The question is, can Bill Belichick build a winning team back? I think it'll be interesting to see. Cam Newton played pretty well in the game last night. Their offense is not as electric as they'd hope, but he's talked about some of the hard things they've gone through, and he says that they're basically trying to use these learning moments to get better as a team. Here's what he said after the game last night.
Well, the last couple of games, it kind of builds character. And, you know, we did a great job with situational football, trailing at halftime, but just being resilient and, you know, just battling back as an offense.
So they're 3-5. They're in third place in the division. They got a lot of ground to make up, but there's a lot of football left to be played. I'm not writing them off quite yet.
Okay, and in 30 seconds, Chris, give us the rundown on what's happening with college football, where they didn't do a coronavirus bubble.
Yeah, and there was a big debate about whether or not they would or wouldn't try to play the season, and I think it kind of culminated in a moment that a lot of folks saw on Saturday. Notre Dame beat number one Clemson down in overtime, and students stormed the field, and it was a pretty jarring sight to see thousands of students jumping around, bumping into each other at a time where we know the pandemic numbers are rising and cases are surging. It'll be tough, I think, for college football to finish out the season. They're going to have a lot of challenges. And it's important to remember, these are student athletes. These are not professional athletes that get paid. So I think that adds an element to this as well.
Well, we're going to continue to check the score on all of it in future days. That's Radio Boston's Chris Siderick. Thanks, Chris.
Tommy point for you, Tiziano.
Tommy point.